Please, I'm a banker. Put your hands in the air. Give me all your money.
Hello, faithless sisters, and welcome to episode 61 of the Diddly Dumb Podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden.
And I'm Mark.
And joining us today, in the continued absence of Mr. Charlton, far too busy down at the Fab Cafe in Manchester, interviewing the likes of Louise Jameson, is that still the same sentence? Is Mr. Mark Atkinson.
Hello.
Of the Proctor Who podcast, hello, Mark.
Hello, hello, good to be here.
Who's actually joined Hayden before on one of your...
Yeah, we did it for the Diddly Dum, didn't we? Hayden, me and you had a chat, didn't we, for the Diddly Dum, for the Podcasters Assemble.
Podcasters Assemble, of course.
That was it.
Yes. He said Podcasters Royale there. I'm getting far too confused, there's too many podcasts around.
That's a very good plug for my other podcast, though, so thank you very much for that, Doc.
Definitely. And mine, Proctor Who. You guys listen to us, don't you?
Indeed, every single, well, I say every week during series 9 and twice monthly apart from that.
Oh, nice one. Brilliant. And you've been catching up, Doc, haven't you?
Well, I only listen to every third one because I only like Craig's taste in music.
Are you joking? Is that true?
Yeah, just anything cab. Oh, of course not. I very nearly put my foot through my speakers when you were praising Ghostlight, though.
Really? Well, he was, yeah, more than me. He absolutely loves it. He's a sociologist, isn't he? So he's got really behind it.
Of course he's, isn't he? Now, I think that if you're going to write a story, you shouldn't write one that can only be understood once they release a DVD documentary about it 30 years later.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Totally. That's where I was really coming from with that one. I think that was probably my least favourite of season 26. But after listening to Craig talk about it, it made me appreciate it a lot more, actually. But I know what you mean on that one.
Now, I can't remember. I think I was so, by the time last week, we managed to get our other Mark. How many Marks do we know now?
There's a lot of us about.
It's at least three. Mm. The good thing about you is because your name's spelled with a C.
Yeah.
It's when you go onto Facebook, you've got about 20 different message groups.
Right.
It's Hayden and Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the number of times I've sent a rude remark about someone to the person themselves. I forgot which Mark it was.
You could even say that out of our last four episodes, three of our guest stars have been called Mark. So this is the third in the Mark trilogy, I guess. Well,
brilliant. Excellent. Rolling this together.
Of course. This is, of course, the third in our Mark trilogy. Yeah. Seamless. Yeah. Seamless. I was, if we hadn't been so flustered last time, the new introduction was to be the fourth finest Doctor Who podcast out there. It was going to be the third until those buggers at Radio Rassilon started up again. and then, if we said we're the first best out there, it just sounds boastful.
Slightly. I don't know. It gives you that impression.
If we say we're the second best out there, everyone would just assume that we mean that one of the big franchises is at number one. Whereas size doesn't, in fact, equate to quality. But if I say fourth, I think it causes a lot of bitter infighting amongst our fellow podcasters.
Okay.
So I'm wondering which ones is he talking about?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
How British is it of us though to put ourselves at fourth in our own rankings in our head?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to think about that on Prog 2. I'm gonna have to give us a ranking out of where we are. I think we're coming in third. Don't know why.
If we actually did a poll, in DWM for the top 10 best podcasts, Colin Baker would still come 12th.
Yeah.
Well, you said a few episodes ago, Mark.
Yeah.
Our podcast stats have reached 10,000 listeners.
Yes.
Do you mean per episode or?
No way. No, just overall. No, we don't get.
I was so upset when I heard that, and I was crossing my fingers, thinking, "Oh, please let them mean just added up overall."
Yeah, no, it's about 17,000, I think, now for what we've done. You know, since episode one. But you know, no, I mean, it's not where we're going to get like maybe 300-400 regular listeners, I think I would say. But, you know, that's cool, isn't it? That's still a lot of people. It's good, and it's just nice to know people listen to you. I mean, I listen to you guys, you know, walking my dog and on my bike and all that sort of stuff. So it's just nice to know that people listen to you and you know, obviously come back and enjoy it every week or every couple of weeks or whatever.
It's nice to be to know that you're being listened to, specifically when someone goes to take someone for a shit. For those of our faithless listeners who may have missed episode 51, tell us about Proctor Who briefly, Mark.
All right, Proctor Who, well, it was my idea to get the podcast together because I'm a musician, so I love music, and I do like particularly prog music, but I like every bit of everything, to be honest. And obviously, I love Doctor Who. And so I used to listen to different podcasts that are either Doctor Who and a couple of prog rock ones that I listened to and loved them both. And I thought, why don't I just do, you know, both things together on the same podcast? And I'd known Bob as a musician for, you know, 3 or 4 years, maybe a bit longer. And we'd always talked about Doctor Who whenever we saw each other at gigs and things like that. So I thought he was the perfect guy to do a podcast with because he doesn't shut up. And he's got lots to say about Doctor Who. And Craig I'd met at my gigs in Whitby because he lives in Whitby, I used to, Craig. And it's again the same thing whenever I'd finished my gig, I'd go and stand with him and we'd talk about Doctor Who for about 2 hours after my gig. And again, I just thought he's the perfect guy as well because, you know, it's just nice to know that someone's passionate about it, isn't it? And people that can articulate what they mean and the passion for the show. So yeah, I just gradually got it together with them guys and just said, should we just have a go? And we did the first one as a pilot. And it went really well, and it was funny, and we laughed a lot. And so we just put it out there, and it's just gone on from there, really. So, yeah, we play 3 songs, a podcast, usually the more sort of proggy, but very melodic. It's quite melodic prog, and it basically just want to play good songs, you know. And at the minute, we're taking it to hosting as well. We do Bob host one, then Craig host one, obviously I host one. And Craig is always, as you said yourself, Doc, playing more poppy sort of stuff that's maybe a bit more mainstream. So, yeah, it's all a good laugh. We have a laugh. Do you just seriously just listen to the ones that Craig hosts? Is that true?
I don't know what heck.
All right. I thought you would say it.
Although I will confess that I can't remember which one I was listening to, but I was listening to it in the kitchen when I was cooking something.
Yeah.
And his first song he selected was a Kylie one.
Right.
I can't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah.
But I do remember
it was a certain pit, wasn't it?
Within about 20 seconds, I was sort of bopping, sashaying around the kitchen with wooden spoons on my pots and pans.
Right.
And I usually only do that for Bucks Fizz as a piece of the action.
Yeah, cool.
2 points. One of the reasons we've had you on, apart from you being a charming guest, of course,
thank you,
is because I know absolutely nothing about music.
Right. Okay.
Clearly, if you're bopping around the kitchen to Bucks Fizz.
And so we're looking for your wisdom.
Okay.
So the first question is, what exactly is it's progressive, isn't it, prog?
Yeah.
What exactly does it mean?
Well, it's just a genre that's come out of bands like, that started off like Genesis and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and that sort of style of music. It's a bit, Yes as well, a bit more experimental, Pink Floyd. You know, that sort of music that's maybe goes off in tangents and doesn't do exactly what you think it's going to do. I think that's the essence of prog, I would say, myself. But nowadays, it covers a massive spectrum of music, really. It's, you know, I play in a band myself called River Sea, and we did our own album and stuff. And I would say that that's more melodic, you know, songs really. That, but they've got a prog influence in the sense they're slightly off kilter here and there. You know, if you know what I mean. So yeah.
If you were listening to, well, if I were, cause you'd know anyway. Listening to a piece of music, let's say I listened to, I don't know, what did Gloria Gaynor sing while she was on roller skates? I Will Survive.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, oh, that's disco.
Yeah.
Because I can tell,
right,
even as musically ignorant as me. Can you tell from listening to a piece of prog rock, oh, that's prog rock? Or is it only that if you'd know, oh, yes, that's by that band, and I know that they're into this sort of experimentation, therefore it's prog rock? Is there actually a sound that links them all together?
It's hard to say, really. If you hear a song and it's, I don't know, that's a difficult question.
Yes, but it's not Kylie.
No. It's loads of different things. I don't know, it's quite hard to explain about that.
I think that the two most distinguished and perhaps most conventional ways to distinguish progressive rock from another genre of rock is to A, look at the album artwork, and B, is to also see how long the tracks go on for. I was listening to a classic prog rock album over the weekend. It was Genesis, A Trick of the Tail. And it was one of the albums that my dad used to listen to a lot, being a big Genesis fan. I used to sit next to the record player with his headphones on, which are always a little bit too big for me, looking through these brilliant, brilliant vinyl covers that it'd have. I mean, especially Genesis, for stuff like Foxtrot and The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. It's experimentation, I suppose, and it was also born out of stuff like psychedelic rock, I suppose. So you could look at people like Pink Floyd and, I mean, even Jimi Hendrix as, I suppose, the figureheads, and King Crimson as well, I suppose, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not just reading this off. This is actually...
No, no, I mean, there's some amazing bands. It encompasses a lot of different music, I think. You know, Peter Gabriel, for example. You know, I even play a bit of Seal in some prog time. I'm not saying that's prog, but it's just stuff that's slightly different. And I don't know. It's quite hard to encapsulate, isn't it, really?
I suppose now progressive rock is more alternative rock, isn't it? So yeah, maybe bands like Air and Radiohead, which are a little bit more electronic, I suppose, and a little bit more less conventional songmanship, I suppose, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, that's weird.
Well, I didn't understand a word of that. Computer.
Hello. How can I be of service?
Oh. Can it be that the Hoosium computer has finally tired of impersonating famous computers of the silver screen? Or maybe we finally can't think of any more.
Oh, yeah.
And has returned to using its proper voice? Computer, can you please analyse everything that Mark and Hayden have just said and translate it into plain English for me?
Processing. Conversation between Hayden and Mark translates as follows. We are massive fans of Genesis and Phil Collins.
Ah, now I understand.
Yes, yes.
Genesis allowed is not.
Did you listen to the songs in Hayden?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
You don't forward widen them, you listen to them all the way through?
All the way through, yeah.
Oh, cool. I will sometimes do that.
Yeah.
I will admit, if within about a minute... I'm not sort of, I don't exactly toe-tapped or anything.
Yeah.
But sort of jigging along to it. Oh, this is a catchy, it's a nice tune. And I will tend to
forward-wind it. Yes, fair enough. I mean, sometimes I do, to be honest, because obviously I've heard the song loads of times before. So if I'm checking the podcast out later, you know, my bike or whatever, walking dog, I sometimes, if the song starts, think, oh, I'll just forward-wind because I just want to get to make sure everything was all right later on. But, you know, most of the time I don't, obviously, because I love the songs that I play. You know, if it's a Craig episode, definitely forewarned. Yeah.
This is a question I've been burning to ask you for ages, Mark, and I didn't ask you on Podcasters Assemble, but is there ever anything that either Bob and Craig have wanted to play that you've put your foot down with and you just thought, nope, there is absolutely no way that we're playing that? Or is there, you know, 100% democracy among the presenters on Prog to Who?
No, it's 100% democracy. Yeah, I would never do that. No, they can play what they want. Isn't it?
Yeah, because there was that Twin Dilemma review you wanted to do, wasn't there, Hayden, the tap up the foot down?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's scary because we're doing at the minute, next one up is Then Quite Dead, then we're doing Blink, and then we're doing The Doctor's Wife, because we've been going through all the way through The Doctors. So next up, we're doing The Randomizer, which is basically an app we got on the phone, put all the stories that we've not done in them. And basically, at the end of every episode now, we're going to press a button, and that's going to select what we're going to watch next, which is very scary. So it could be a lot of the missing episodes and everything like that as well. So, but anyway, it should be fun, though. It's nice not to know, isn't it, just randomly. I've just been watching The Armageddon Factor, you know. Do you two enjoy that story?
Go on, Hayden.
It's a bit of a... I wouldn't say it's a black spot, but I suppose the Graham Williams era, especially the latter Graham Williams era, is something which I don't normally dip my toe into from time to time. And unless it is something like City of Death. But having said that, something like The Armageddon Factor is bizarrely watchable, even though they've got to the end of the season and there isn't any money left. And it's six episodes long. But it's not really... I'm more partial to put on something from, you know, the Hinchcliffe era, I suppose, if I want to... Or Letts and Dix.
Definitely. I mean, I lived through the Graham Williams era because I was about, you know, 9, 10, 11 sort of time, I would say, yeah. When that era was on, it was my... I was going off it, even though I watched it all the time. It just wasn't as good as it used to be, if you know what I mean. And then I got more back into it when J&T took over. But on my rewatch I did a few years ago, I rewatched everything in order, and that was still my least favourite era of the whole thing, the whole Graham Williams era.
Mm.
So I had to force myself to watch the Key to Time season recently. It's terrible, because it's probably the episodes I've watched the least, if you know what I mean, out of the whole Tom Baker era, I'd say then.
Any second now, beautiful mushrooms will blossom and burst. And chaos shall break upon the universe.
I can't bring myself to like Armageddon Factor.
No.
It's just so dull.
No, it is. It's very dull. I don't understand what's going on, to be honest. It's one of them. It's like, what's
happening? I mean, Power of Krull's bad enough.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think in all the others, Tom has got some really good proper baddie he can, you know, sort of stand toe-to-toe with and chew the scenery with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Ian Cuthbertson. And then the Captain, the Count, Professor Rumford.
Yeah.
And then there's not really anyone in Krull. It would have been if they'd had cast Philip Maddock as the lead refinery man instead of just some guy sitting at a desk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then you get to Armageddon Factor, and it's the Marshal is just sitting around looking glazy eyed all the time.
Yeah.
And the Shadow is just sort of drifting around going, whoa.
Yeah. It's just really poor, really. It's just really poorly put over, I think. When you think about a couple of years earlier, they're doing like Seeds of Death and Seeds of Doom and, you know, Deadly Assassin and all that, and then you get to episodes like that. It just really went downhill for me, I think. But, you know, they pulled it back, didn't they? I'm sure they were doing the best they could at the time.
I just had a terrible, terrible, terrible image of Mark sitting there in the same pose as Alex in A Clockwork Orange with his eyelids pinned back, trying to watch the Key to Time season.
Yeah, I know. It's taken me a few months, I've got to be honest. But, you know, I just find if I can't sleep at night, it's a nice thing to put on. 25 minutes into it. It's just a great thing. Being serious as well. That's how I watch a lot of Who, actually, especially classic series.
What shall I use tonight? Night Owl?
Yeah, exactly. Let's.
Or the Armageddon Factor.
Yeah. Or Hartnell can just have you off in 5 minutes, to be honest. Which,
oh, poor
should
me.
Get them a t-shirt.
What are your tastes in music, Hayden? Didn't you used to be in a band?
Yes, I did, yeah.
So I seem to remember ridiculing you about the subject. 99% of podcasters seem to be ex-band members.
Well, yes, not only you have ridiculed me, quite a few people. It was the Exploding Plastic Guitar Band.
Brilliant.
That I used to be called in, and we were called as much because we were fans of Andy Warhol and the Velvet Underground, and also because there were three of us, and we could only play guitars. But we did manage to record an album. Well, I say an album, we recorded 5 tracks, including 1 song about a depressed chain-smoking rabbit, and another song which pretty much would have got me done for plagiarism because I realised that I had subliminally covered the entire chord structure of Do You Want to Be a Spaceman by Oasis and just written completely new words to it. So it was...
Wow. Imagine Oasis waking up to discover that another band has copied their entire chord structure. Oh, the irony.
Yeah, so it wasn't very good. And the one gig that we did resulted in a snapped guitar, a 7-person high sort of pile-up, I suppose, and then our lead singer lost his trousers. So all in all, it was a very good night.
Excellent, brilliant.
Was that the next band on the bill?
Was the what band on the...
Oh, so your lead singer actually lost his trousers. It's not the name of the band, then.
Should be the name of a band. That'd be great.
What band names have you been part of, Mark?
Well, my first band when I was a kid was called Expressions, and we were gigging
from... Oh, that's quite deep.
Yeah, no.
That's not nearly crazy enough.
Yeah.
You were deep early on, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 1984 when we... Actually, 1983 when we got together at school, and then we were gigging by the time we were 16, and gigging for quite a bit as well. We did a lot of club work and everything as well, and we used to do it for a living quite early, actually. I went full-time when I was... 25, I think, something like that, but when I went full-time, and with my band Frontier at the time, and then we split up, and then I went solo and did loads of solo work. Still do, that's what I do for a living now, is just a lot of gigs on the acoustic, just me and my voice, and play a lot of covers for people and get paid for it. It's great. I get to sit in my ass and everything and have fun, you know. But obviously there's a lot of packing up and a lot of driving involved, but that's just part of the job, really. My band at the minute is, I used to be in my, called The Company as well. And The Beetroots, they were good. All acoustic thing, The Beetroots. And that's we were busking over here in Cumbria. I live in Cumbria now. And before we did, I came over with my mates and we were all busking. And because it was really hot, we got suntanned or we all turned red. So that's how we became The Beetroots. That's how the name, what the name came from. And that, yeah, a four-piece acoustic thing, all harmonies. It was really good fun.
I was in a school band called Oxygen, and then we thought that was a little bit oblique, let's say. So then we decided to change our name to Phenomenon, which was just absolutely terrible. And then we went on to, and then I did some solo stuff. I say solo stuff under the name Same Species Aliens.
Excellent. That's a good name, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which I might use for a book one day. But but yeah, nothing. I'm so jealous of your life, Mark. I really am. I'd love to have, you know, the ability to go up on stage and...
Have you not been on stage for quite a while then?
10 years.
Really?
Well, only when interviewing Doctor Who writers.
Yeah. Yeah, apart from then.
How old are you now, Hayden?
I'm 27 now.
Right, okay. So like when you were 17 was the last time you played live?
Yeah, it was.
So did you enjoy it when you enjoy it when you did it?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. It gets such a thrill. The nerves before you go on. Then you go on and you realise. I used to realise pretty quickly whether it was a good gig or not.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of caught on very... And you can sort of gauge how the room's feeling as well. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think the last time I played live, it was in a pub and it was an open mic night and I did some... Elliot Smith and Neutral Milk Hotel covers.
Right.
Both of you probably have never heard of those people.
I haven't, no. I haven't heard of them.
Should definitely check out Neutral Milk Hotel, especially for Prompt 2.
Oh, cool. Okay. You'll have to write that down for me. I've never heard that before.
Will do.
I'm quite jealous, really. I try to disguise my utter ignorance of music by saying my tastes are eclectic.
Right.
If you even start talking about things like melodies or chords, I have to reach for a dictionary.
Really?
I just don't understand. I'm not tone deaf or anything.
No.
But I just don't understand
how it works.
Possibly, but if I put my mind to it, I probably would.
Yeah.
But if you were to look at my iTunes account, see, what I used to do is I'd hear a song. I thought, oh, I like that. I'll find out who that is. And I'd go out and I'd buy the CD. Yeah. And find that, unfortunately, it was the only one on the whole CD that I could stand.
Really?
And so when things like iTunes and that came, where you could buy the individual tracks,
okay,
it saved me so much money.
Right.
But if you were to look at my iTunes account, it's so much... It is eclectic, actually. Eclectic sounds quite, makes it sound quite...
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a highfalutin philosophy behind it.
Well, you like what you like, don't you? That's the thing. You got to...
Let me just select the A's in my iTunes account.
Yeah.
And I'll go on a repeated scroll through it. And just tell me when to stop. Let's see what comes up as.
Stop.
Oh dear, Army Dreamers by Kate Bush.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah,
that's all
Kate
right.
Bush. She's almost proggy, isn't she?
Yeah,
almost.
She is. She's,
yeah, Peter Gabriel and stuff. Yeah. That's not bad at all.
It's brilliant, but yeah, it's the fact that the next one is completely... Let's try the bees. Go on, right.
Is it going to be Bee Gees? Going to turn up, are
they? Hang on, scroll.
Or the Bee Sharps.
The Bruce Springsteen.
Simpson's Resonance. Stop.
Oh, I can't stop it. Hang on.
Oh, this is going to be Zed. Let's go to Zed.
ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Oh, it's stuck in a loop, thank God.
Zootons.
You're still stuck on Bee.
Oh, fuck you. Bloody hell, stop it.
How do you stop it? I can see that you definitely mastered music now.
Oh, that's going to be bloody batteries to fall out of my mouse. it's the theme to Blockbusters.
Brilliant.
Which we had to download when we do our annual gold run at Christmas.
Right. Excellent. I bet you listen to that a lot, do you?
Let's do one sport. Try and find something decent. I'll do the C's.
Stop.
Oh, God, it's all... It's all podcast related.
Right.
It's the, we were using this for the, I don't think it's come out yet, for the ad for the Rev.
Right.
It's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang instrumental.
Doctor, you never go to gigs then? Do you never watch live music?
Oh, God, no. No, I mean, really? I did when I was in my teens.
Okay.
But, up in Manchester, but other than that, no, it's... Right. I just...
Don't get it, how it works. And I had a guy coming up to me the other day, you know, at a gig. I was playing away at a gig and it was all going well. And this guy was coming up to me, really drunk like they are. And he said, can you play Never Walk Alone? And I said, sorry, man, I don't do that one. Come on, you must know it. And I said, no, I know what song you mean, but I don't know the words, don't know the chords. No, oh, come on, just strum it. You don't strum it. Oh, honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was convinced I didn't know it, honestly. And he got aggressive with me and everything as well. It was just like, oh, man, don't even understand how it works.
All you should have said to me, Mark, was, sorry, mate, I'm an Everton fan. I don't do that one.
Yeah, I should learn it, really. But no, I said to him, look, I know 250 songs. Here's my sheet, and I have a double-sided laminated sheet with all the songs I can sing. All in alphabetical order, so people choose. That's how my gigs go. People choose the songs. And he's still, I don't look at your sheet. I want you to play Never Walk Alone, but I don't know it, man. you know, honestly, it went on for ages. Yeah, it's crazy. So people sometimes have said that they don't, they think you just strum. So is that what you think, Doc? Is that what you think happens, or is it not like that for you?
No, I mean, when you get people on stage and they're doing it so fast and so wild, while they're leaping all over the place, I think you can't be at the same time concentrating on which strings you're touching.
Yeah.
But
sometimes you don't have to.
in my heart, I think, yeah, the bastards. In my mind, I think, yes, they're very, very clever. I just don't understand. I just don't really understand it.
Right. That's how I think about you guys.
Just in general. Brilliant.
No, that was my first question.
Right.
That was my first question, was prog rock.
Right.
My second question, arising from what you said, is your podcasters, you've actually met each other.
Yes.
Right. I don't understand this.
Yeah, it is. It's strange, isn't it? It's funny to be. We did the Star Wars one all in the same room when we reviewed the Star Wars film. And yeah, it was hilarious because
I remember that one. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we all sat in cinema, and as soon as it finished, instead of what you normally do, isn't it, when your film's finished, you turn to your mate and say, "That was great," or whatever. And we just looked at each other, said, "No one say anything," and we just got up and walked off like we didn't know each other, and got into our separate cars to drive to Bob's so he could set up all his gear before we actually said what we thought of the film. It was so surreal. But yeah, it was weird doing a podcast in the same room together. But yeah, it's good. Have you two never met?
Of course, you of little faith. Of course, we meet each other. Every fortnight we meet each other in a giant neoclassical museum. But I assumed that we were the only ones.
We enjoy each other's company. It's funny. It's good. No, it's good. It's just the chemistry that you have together, whatever works, isn't it, really? I think as long as you enjoy it, you know, there's no point in doing a podcast if you're not enjoying it, is it, really? It's just nice to chat about Doctor Who with people that understand what you mean, if you know what I mean. As Tom Baker said about Doctor Who fandom, he said, for those that understand, no explanation is necessary. But for those that don't understand, no explanation is possible. Yeah, and it's true that about Doctor Who fans, isn't it? Because, you know, you understand, don't you? Have a connection. As soon as you say Doctor Who, you think, okay, cool. You know, you're into the same thing as me and you understand why you love it so much.
Yeah.
It's bizarre, isn't it? So I was thinking that today while I was in the bath reading my latest complete history. Because my partner Tam got me for a birthday present the subscription to the complete history, so I've been getting all them.
Really?
Yeah, I've been getting all them.
Are these the ones that got two stories in each?
Yeah, well, they've got sometimes three or four, but yeah, they're good though. They obviously just log what the production and things and the origin, the story, and all that sort of thing. But sometimes when I'm reading, you know, something, and I'm on the fifth page of it saying, and on the 28th of August, they broke at 5 p.m. for tea and went to... I suddenly think, why am I reading this? It's such a bizarre thing to be interested in, yet you sort of still carry on reading.
I considered subscribing to it, but when I calculated that there might be around about 80 of them.
Exactly.
I've not got the shelf space.
And it was, and the money. 800 quid, it's a lot of money, isn't it? But... it's spread over 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is, so it's not too bad.
I put everything on a Kindle these days. I only buy stuff if it's a really, really beautiful looking book,
right,
or if it's something like an old Doctor Who annual.
Yeah.
Well, don't get Hayden started on that.
Right.
yes.
gone on to bits of late news. Not late in the sense that it's just come in this minute, but late in the sense that I've forgotten for a long time. Two really astonishing pieces of news. The first one is that Mark Gatiss has been hired for yet another season of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And even more astonishing, Stephen Moffat has announced that he'll be delivering his next press conference in a Scottish accent. I can't believe either of those reasons. It's just gobsmacking, isn't it? I did hear someone suggest on another podcast, I forget which, recently, that maybe that when Chibbers introduced his writing room, Mark Gatiss may no longer get a look in. So this may be his last hurrah.
Yeah, well, possible. But, you know, I watched The Inquiet Dead today because we're reviewing it next week.
Mm.
And obviously The Inquiet Dead is his first one, wants it. And I still think it's great. I think that was the first one where I was, when it came back, and that was the first one that I thought, I'm watching Doctor Who again. This feels like Doctor Who. Because I didn't really feel that with the first two episodes. So I'd still give Matt Gatiss a chance, really. Although I think by the time the next season comes in and Chibnall comes in, he needs to maybe leave it alone for a few years and let other people have a go, really. But, you know, I've never hated the Matt Gatiss script at all. I think one of two have been a bit weaker. But overall, I've enjoyed his stories, although none of them have knocked him out of the park. I think, apart from the first one, The Inquiet Dead, I still think that's great.
I think it's two best with The Unquiet Dead and the, is it the Scarlet Horror?
Crimson Horror.
The Victorian
Crimson
one?
Crimson Horror, it was great, yeah.
Crimson Horror, that was brilliant. But it was. I thought the rest of them are good. But
yeah.
I can never quite see why, you know, there's an automatic, almost like an automatic ticket for every season.
It's the Old Boys Brigade, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's, you tend to use the same people. I mean, you can even say that all of the producers in Doctor Who, you know, all the showrunners have done this over the years.
Yeah.
They always had their tried and tested people. So whether it be Dennis Spooner during Verity Lambert's run, or even you can argue Terry Nation, or you could say Bob Baker and Dave Martin during the Barry Letts era. Philip Hinchcliffe obviously had, you know, Robert Holmes to tidy up any old scripts. But even he used writers more than once, you know. The only problem is that with Stephen Moffat's incessant using of Mark Gatiss is that you've had sort of better writers come and go when they've only been given maybe one or two chances at a Doctor Who script. You know, people like Neil Cross, you could even say Neil Gaiman, you know, and even somebody like Gareth Roberts, you know, has been used very sparingly. You can write the Earthbound funny one, you know, is kind of his remit. I think the problem is that Gatiss seems to have had this season ticket every year.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter on... let's say, for instance, the Crimson Horror had come out as utter tripe, or Sleep No More, you know, really was a complete, you know, flop. You wouldn't use the same writer again. You give somebody else a chance. So even to the point, Neil Gaiman has had a 50-50, you know, sort of ratio hit with his Doctor Who script so far, hasn't he? Doctor's Wife is pretty much lauded as being a great, and Nightmare in Silver is pretty much poo-pooed as being terrible.
It's absolutely terrible. The only episode of Doctor Who ever that made me angry when I was watching I just thought it was so bad. And I think the reason why it was so bad is I was so much looking forward to it. I loved The Doctor's Wife, thought it was amazing. When I heard that Neil Gaiman was going to write The Sad Man, I thought, this is going to be fantastic. And then I saw The Sad Man designs, I thought, this is going to be great. And I watched it, honest, I just thought it was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Mm.
The worst episode of New Who, definitely for me, that one. What do you think, Doc?
Oh, I thought it was Bobbins. I thought it was terrible. I didn't see the point of any of it.
No.
What was the thing that annoyed me most about it?
Super fast Cybermen.
You see, it's one of the... Yeah, well, that's that was exactly it. It's one of these things where in Dalek, in Series 1, the Dalek almost has these invincible superpowers.
Right.
And then by the next series, they can be defeated by, you know, sticking a hat over their eye or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The Cybermen are super fast. And then you know, you can't keep them like that because they'll never be defeatable. The angels, you notice, in Weeping Angels, very quickly become defeatable. You know, you can defeat them just not by doing other than just looking at them all the time. In fact, they do that with most sci-fi series. They bring in a new alien or monster. And for the first time, it's undefeatable.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after a while, Star Trek does this a lot. After all, you can defeat them just by clenching your hands together and elbowing them in the ribs or something, which I think is the Starfleet fighting technique they British.
I mean, Blink does remain the Weeping Angels' best episode, doesn't it? I mean, it's just incredible. It's still my favourite of New Who is Blink. I just love it. I can't wait to rewatch it in a couple of weeks for the podcast.
Oh, is that coming up?
Yeah, we're going to do Blink, yeah. Definitely, yeah. That's going to be the 10th Doctor. Yeah, I love Blink. I really do. I watched it the first time I watched it, and I just smiled all the way through thinking, this is amazing. This is how it should be every week. I'd really enjoyed Human Nature and The Family's Blood as well. I thought that was a step up in production terms, in story terms. I thought that was amazing. Mm. And then Blink happened. I thought, wow, them three together were the pinnacle of New Who, I think, for me, even now.
Oh, I think you have to go a long way to try and beat Empty Child for me.
Empty Child is brilliant.
Well, I'll admit a fair deal of that is not me thinking, wasn't this an amazing story? It's me just googling in nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember watching that the first year and thinking, oh my God, they really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, this is beyond. You know, you're getting people, some people, you say, oh, it's not good, that's as good as classic. That's as good as classic, you know.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh God, this is something that's, when no one can seriously point to this and say, that's not way beyond anything they've done before.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Blink's the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And what did we review the other week? Well, we were doing just the soundtracks.
We did the Impossible Planet, the Satan one.
Yeah, amazes me, that one.
Magic. Yeah, we did that one, didn't we, for when Craig played Carly. It was Better the Devil You Know, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That way he played it on that one. What a guy. Yes, no, a brilliant, brilliant episode.
Of course, yes.
That was
one. I've been sitting here on a screen, scrolling through, and all of Callie's bloody songs, I don't remember which one it was. So I forgot it was...
Better the Devil You Know.
So, we've managed to evade all the usual nonsense about, oh, doesn't our atrium look lovely? shall we proceed straight into the exhibition hall, Hayden?
I think we should.
Computer.
How can I be of service?
Could you open the doors to the exhibition hall, please? Thank you. You'll have noticed, by the way, that since this is by way of a musically themed podcast in Mark's honour, I've reconnected the computer to the music section of the Whoseum Library and given it free rein to illustrate our conversation with appropriate clips. Mark?
Yes?
You've got a rather hefty tome under your arm there.
I have indeed. I've brought along Doctor Who The Vault by Marcus Hearn, released in the 50th year, with all the merchandise and pictures and glorious information about the show and the comics and everything, all 50 years, really, year by year. It's just amazing to see. I love it.
Complete with half hardback, half squashy cover.
Yeah, slightly squashy, isn't it? Yeah. I got this for a fiver, I think it was, in W.H. Smith's. I think when it came out, it was about £20, wasn't it?
Yes.
£30, in fact, on the back it says. But, I got it for a fiver from, like, a Bag and Books, you know, one of them sort of places.
Oh.
And I just snapped it up. I thought it was amazing. So, yeah, I loved it. I want to pay £30 for it, but it is an amazing book. How old are you, Doc?
You
don't mind me asking.
Well,
you don't sound that old, let's put that. So the Weetabix cards, for example.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, they were a big thing for your childhood, were they?
I just got the other week The Amazing World of Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Which you got by collecting Typhoo tea bags in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
So I was convinced my mother had given it away, but it turns out that she's it's still up in Manchester. And it's... See, this vault came out for the 50th, didn't it?
Yes, it did, yeah, yeah.
And I saw it in... There's a shopping arcade near me. There's one of those bookstores that's not... You know, it's not like Waterstones.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that's like, you know, cheap books. I think the shop's title is Cheap or Crappy Books. And it was sort of stacks near the door, and I thought, I'll bet that'll be some, you know, cheap bit of crap that they've rolled off for the 50th. But I bought it when I saw how cheap it was about a year ago. And it's lovely, because it's full of stuff. This is one of the few things that keeps me listening to on Facebook is that, you know, sometimes there's a group on there called, I think it's called Doctor Who the Classic Years.
Yeah.
This week they've been posting a couple of photos of Tom Baker. When you've been a Who fan for this long,
yeah,
you think, you know, I've seen every single photo under the sun.
Yeah.
I've heard every single interview. And you suddenly come across a photograph that you've never ever seen before. And it really is lovely. Something like, let's just flick through. That's page 28.
Page 28.
Faith and sisters can follow us. Hayden, you just look over my shoulder.
Uh-huh. Budge up.
That little kid peering inside the Dalek.
Dalek Nation, yeah. Yeah, magic. Absolute magic. And there's Zabby a couple of pages on,
yeah,
looking over people's shoulders.
Page 30, Ray Kuzik with his daughter. What we're going to be watching later, one of the clips on it, you know what I'm talking about, was Terry Nation being interviewed in his stately home by...
Michael Winner.
No, Alan Wicker.
Oh, okay.
Michael Winner. So how did the Daleks come about? And Terry Nation pauses for barely a second, but it was very, very significant. And then says, well, I needed a villain. Because he sort of scooped over you-know-who.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lovely line in... Have you read the latest DWM yet, 501?
Yes,
with Tommy. Yeah. That's a lovely line where he says, oh yeah, Terry Nation was very generous, wasn't he, giving old Ray 50 quid for the Daleks? Yeah. And then insisting on a receipt.
Yeah. It is one of the travesties, I think, of that time, to be honest. It's so funny because you see Ray McCusick being interviewed on them Dalek Years tapes, didn't you, when he was saying, and Terry Nation was coming up to him after the success of the first story and saying, don't worry, Ray, I'll look after it all, it'd be great. There's going to be Dalek, you know, Dalek toys and everything like that, don't worry. And he says, and he never saw him again. He said, it's crazy. He just got 50 quid, didn't he? That's terrible, isn't it? Because I think the design of the Dalek is one of the biggest reasons why it's such a success, isn't it, really?
Definitely.
Yeah. So it's a travesty that Terry Nation didn't take him and just, you know, go with him and share it with him instead of just taking it on for himself. It speaks a lot about his character, doesn't it, I think? Anyway.
It's not until you're grown up that the idea of, the little mutated creatures inside a metal shell and they're all racist because they hate anyone who's unlike them, has any sort of meaning for you. When you're a kid, it's all about
the visual.
That iconic visual image. Yeah. And if it wasn't for the fact that grabs kids at that age, adults would never take the Daleks seriously at all, would we?
No, I mean, exactly, no.
If you think about it, even at our ages, it's quite comical that we don't just, you know, ridicule the Daleks.
Yeah, yeah.
But because we live in a culture where most of us, from very early age, are really scared of them when we were little, there's still that memory in the background. And it's all the visual thing and the vocals as well.
Yeah, of course. But definitely.
Terry didn't really contribute much to it in my mind.
He didn't really. He just wrote a sort of a hack script, really, didn't he? Just to get him out of a quandary at that particular time. And it just so happened that really talented people got involved with it and made it work. And it became iconic in that way. And instead of sharing it with him, especially Ray McCusick, and just taking it all, you know, it's just crazy, isn't it? I mean, speaking of Daleks, you know, I was just looking at page 110, which has got a picture of the Dalek Death Ray. The ice lolly. Did you ever have this, Doc?
I did, actually. Hang on. Yeah. Was it sweet cigarettes? Hang on. Oh, my God. 126 is Mark. No, not you. Sorry. Is Mark. Mark John's K1 robot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you see, by the way, Hayden?
Yeah.
Have you seen Matt's Louise interview?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Have you seen the thing on the screen in the background?
No.
But part two of it, they're sitting in the... I say, Mark, this is boring for you, but they're sitting in the Fab Cafe in Manchester and Matt is interviewing Louise on stage and there's a big screen behind them where they're putting up, you know, old memories of Dotsu and Tenko, and they play the TV advert for the Dennis Fisher range.
Oh, no
with
way.
The K1 robot and Louise looking like a Barbie doll with brown hair. What a coincidence. She's only played it a couple of days earlier. What was 110, Mark? Oh, the lolly. Yes, I had those.
Yeah, the lolly.
I can always remember thinking, green on a red background doesn't look very scary.
Well, the thing is with the lolly is that...
it tasted like shite.
Yeah. Exactly. I used to hate it, but I used to get it anyway because it was the Dalek Death Ray, but it tasted awful. Honestly, irony. Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? What are things you do as a kid? Just because it said Dalek Death Ray on it, there was no relation to a Dalek whatsoever inside it, apart from that it tasted terrible.
But at least we possibly put a halfpenny in Terry's retirement fund.
Yeah, exactly. We did. We've definitely contributed, haven't we? The amount of merchandise we all buy as well, it's just crazy. It feeds that engine, doesn't it?
Hayden.
Yeah.
In your... Hayden's been, as the listeners will know, has been splurging out of late on old-time Doctor Who annuals. Are there any photos in there, or are they all sort of coloured paintings?
All paintings, apart from some of the Davison annuals, which are a little bit more sort of behind the scenes. You've got, you know, pictures of the Melker and other bits and bobs from that sort of late Tom Baker, early Davison era.
I've got a few of them myself, actually, the annuals from the original Dewberry, Ninja release.
Ooh.
I got the first Doctor Who annual recently off eBay for about £3, I think it was. Something like that, including postage.
No!
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Yeah, it's the first one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I got it for £3 odd, something like that. Yeah, I know it was really cheap, I just couldn't believe that I got it for that price. But yeah, good condition as well.
I got the second one yesterday for about 15 quid.
All right, cool. Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's just quite incredible. I mean, the ones which are really expensive are the Troughton and the early Pertwee ones, because they weren't... Mm. They weren't sold as well. They weren't distributed as much. So,
no.
I don't think I really want to shell out £270 for John Pertwee's first annual. But but one can dream. One can dream.
Yeah, I tell you what, you can get in cheap annual wise is the 2016 annual, which is in most like home bargain shops and things for £1.
Oh,
and they have been for quite a while, actually. There's loads of unsold ones, loads of them.
2006, the Eccleston one was the only one I've had.
Oh, really?
I think there was the one called the Brilliant Book of.
Yeah, that was good. Right? That
yeah,
one.
I got that. I don't think I ever opened it. But the really? Eccleston one I got. This one, someone got it for Christmas, and it was just they clearly done it as an homage to what Doctor Who and Dalek annuals used to be like in the '70s.
Yeah,
because you know it's little silly quizzes like the Doctor has landed on Scaro, trying to trace the way through the maze to get him back to his TARDIS. Silly things like that. They didn't actually do the decent stuff, really decent stuff in 70s annuals, like this guy is trapped in a Dalek base and is running out of cigarettes. How can you make more cigarettes from the Pinchmas? If you go to page
118.
First of all, that's the Dalek bubble bath I got for my 10th birthday.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
black and yellow. Beautiful.
Let me rephrase that for an early birthday. And for years, I had the yellow dome with the eye stalk snapped off. I don't know if you've got. Did you ever have these? I don't think they sell them anymore in supermarkets. We used to be able to get these whacking great tubs of ice, just general plain ice cream. So your mum would stick in the freezer and it would last for about a month.
Right.
And once it was finished, she'd wash it all out and I could stick my Lego in it.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And you end up with a couple of these, which last forever in the house, and you've got all your old Lego in and little bits of broken toy soldiers. And I had the Daleks dome with the eye stalk snapped off. And I thought for years, what the hell is this? And I refused to throw it away because I knew it would come to me one day.
Yeah.
But on the opposite page on 119, that's what you got for sending up for Typhoo tea packs. You got those cards in the... I can tell you're loving this, Hayden. You got those cards...
What? Sorry, what? No.
You got those cards in the boxes of tea bags, and then you'd send off for a poster with lots of little blank spaces on where you'd stick them.
Yeah.
And if you saved off enough, you'd get your that annual. And then, God, on the next page... Pescatons. Yeah, I got that. I might have got that at Christmas. Bloody hell.
Yeah, I was looking at page. I've just lost it now. I was just looking at the top trumps. I think it was one.
Oh, top trumps.
135 was it? So I think. Oh no.
How are you feel? Have I just asked you how you're feeling now?
Me? Yeah. Yes, I'm still got cold. I've been poorly, but I've. Yeah, but cold. Yeah, that's all I've got. A bit of a sniffy cold, but apart from that, I'm all right. Yeah, I was looking at page 135. It's your top trumps ones and the pictures of. The Sea Devils and the Ogrons, they've got them the wrong way around. You know what I mean? They've labelled them wrong. And also on the weapons, this is interesting, the weapons of the Sea Devils, as a rating, they get zero. And a Sensorite gets two. And unbelievably, the Mechanoid gets eight. But the Sea Devil gets nothing. That's crazy, isn't it? You know, that's terrible. And how about this, though? Mental ability for the Sea Devil is 8. Mental ability. And the mental ability for the Sensorite is 5.
What?
So these people just as much as made it up, weren't they, when they just made up the ratings, aren't they?
It's just numbers roulette. No, numbers roulette.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, we're doing this the wrong way around. What we should have done is said, and here's Mark Atkinson, and today we're going to go through pages 1 to 10 of the vault, and then next week Mark will return to go through pages 11 to 20. You need to get hold of this, Hayden, because we could just spend ages, actually.
Yeah.
Right, well, we'll put that in an unlocked display case, because we might get out again. That's quite nice, that.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Hayden.
Yeah. Hello.
What have you brought along for us?
Well, my entry into the Whosium this week, ladies and gentlemen, is the Doctor Who years. Now, this was a streaming video that was hosted on the BBC's Doctor Who website for, oh God, maybe about 5 or 6 years, I reckon, from the start of the new series all the way through to the Matt Smith era. It was sort of, I suppose, intended to present a bit of a history for the 60s, 70s and 80s. And it was set up against the songs of the time, so the music of the time. I stumbled upon this just after I'd finished my exams in the summer of 2005.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
And rubbing it in.
And they're about half an hour. And they're about half an hour each length. And I just think they're fantastic. We just wallow in nostalgia watching them. And it was just perfect for people, you know, sort of new to the show, who wanted to know a little bit more about the classic series. And it was sort of in these, you know, bite-sized chunks of about half an hour for every era. And it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And it was, you know, you got some real toe-tapping tunes and some very ironic ones as well, including some fantastic subtitles, which are also included as well. So when the Green Death is being portrayed, the subtitle comes up saying, Jo Grant gets married to a man who she's only just met, and he's even forward enough to ask if he could take her up the Amazon.
Brilliant.
Now, it's very tongue-in-cheek, as is the music selection as well, and that was inspired by the rock and roll years, which were shown during the 1980s and the 1990s. We used to have them on video, actually, for some reason. My parents used to tape them. And also, bizarrely, I used to date a girl who, her uncle used to be the producer of the rock and roll years.
Oh, cool.
Which I only discovered towards the end of our relationship. He used to...
Otherwise, you wouldn't have broke up with her.
But I think these are absolutely fantastic.
You hear a banging noise?
No.
Sorry?
You hear a banging noise. Oh, sorry, it's only Mark John in his padded cell banging his head against the wall in frustration and jamming his Satan.
Oh, dear. Sorry, Mark John. Sorry, Mark. So, yeah, and I think these are absolutely fantastic. Unfortunately, they are no longer available for streaming on the BBC website, which I think is a huge shame. But they are available on YouTube if anyone wanted to have a look. Absolutely fantastic.
It was rather predictable, though, wasn't it? In the same way that they couldn't play the Beatles clip on the Time Space Visualizer for ages. And then when they brought out the DVD box set of Series 1, they had to completely edit the Doctor Who Confidentials with the machete because it was full of stuff that was different rights. There's probably about 40 different tracks on each era of these Doctor Who years tapes, aren't there? There's no way they'd be able to negotiate. Because I thought the BBC, we've seen a couple of examples on YouTube where the BBC has happily left the videos up, but they've forced someone to take the audio off, haven't we?
Mm.
And that must be it. They can't bother to. It'd be a nightmare trying to negotiate the rights for it.
Yeah.
If only some, I don't know, some forthright podcast took them on their Tumblr page or something, or maybe on their YouTube page. Maybe YouTube is basking a bit too much. I must check, by the way, whether they've taken down your Soul TV appearance on our YouTube page channel yet. Hey, if they haven't done, they might have survived.
Oh, interesting.
So, what did we think of? It's 60s, 70s and 80s, isn't it?
Yeah.
70s, obviously, is the much longer one. What did we think of the 60s? No, I don't mean the decade. I mean the
bit before my time. I mean, it's lovely and interesting to watch these sort of things when it puts the music of the time along with the visuals and goes through each year. It's just lovely seeing the show progress and watching culture progress as well along with it in musical form. Mm. Because, you know, songs have memories for you, don't they, when you first hear them. And actually, you're too young to appreciate that, right? It won't be nostalgia for you, will it? It'll be just being interested in that sort of what happened during that time.
Yeah. Exactly. For you, yeah. And I love music of the past and I love Doctor Who of the past, so it's a perfect melding together. It's incredible to think of, you know, the number ones. It's so coincidental with some of them, because when they're covering The Wheel in Space, you've got Wheels on Fire comes up, which is obviously well known nowadays as the theme tune for Absolutely Fabulous. You know, and also something like You Were Made for Me by Freddie and the Dreamers. When they're covering the Daleks, I think it's very clever some of the choices that they've made for this. But it evokes the time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really does. Really, really does. You know, A Hard Day's Night going together with The Reign of Terror. Think, is it the Ticket to Ride going with The Chaser, as we've already covered. I'm just trying to remember some of the other ones from the 60s.
Half these went over my head, because one of the points I was going to make was I could only find two where the music actually matched the scene. State of Decay was played over, or rather, was played under Fade to Grey.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Which, in a way, you know, decaying, becoming grey. And the other one was... Oh, no, there's another one. There was Tight Fit in the jungle, the mighty jungle, for Kinder.
Oh, yes.
This is quite a good one. And The Planet of Fire by the Thompson Twins.
Doctor, can't you see I'm burning? It's like they use It's Raining Men for the Twin Dilemma, don't they, as well? Which I find quite hilarious.
This is rather cheeky of me commenting on music, but there's very clear differences. The 60s music is, as exciting as it is, it's much more sedate, isn't it? It's the sort of music that can be played by, shall we say, a group of four or five men in very tightly buttoned jackets and drainpipe trousers, standing rigidly to attention on stage with guitars and gently describing, say, a sort of 15-degree arc slowly back and forth of their bodies while they're playing and singing.
So you've been to one of my gigs then?
During my life.
Let's not forget that this won't just be random 60s tracks being picked. This must be, say, a lot about Mr. Stradling's personal musical tastes. And I think it says a lot that while you think the Beatles, possibly one of the most famous bands in history, get four songs in this playlist, while the Small Faces have five.
I think we can
show Mr. Stradling's fighting back there.
I don't know whether you spotted this one, chaps, but David Essex, I'm Going to Make You a Star, playing over the top of Robot, which I thought was very good, which I really liked.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, subtle.
Yeah.
Good.
And also, Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile by Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel for Genesis of the Daleks as well, which is very nice. I rather like that. I like that. But it also makes you want to... It's almost like a double commercial arm, really, this, isn't it? Because it makes you want to go out and search those songs. And if you haven't seen certain episodes, this little sort of highlights package, as it were, no matter how brief they are, makes you want to go out and, you know, and find these stories. I remember one of the ones that I actually, to be honest, when these came out, I still hadn't seen, was The Greatest Show in the Galaxy. But they put Boy Meets Girls Waiting for a Star to Fall over the top of that one. And it made me think, oh, you know, I'd actually really like to see that one. And also, you got Battlefield. It's got If I Could Turn Back Time by Cher, which plays, like, that lyric plays just as the Brigadier comes into shot, which is going to find quite funny.
I wish I could have realised this. I spent this morning on the tube, because what we have to confess, Faithful Sisters, that we were going to do this with Mark a month or so ago, but he was struck low by the dreaded Lurgy at the time.
Yeah.
So we had to postpone it. And so by the time we got to this, I'd almost forgot, I had to replay the tapes again. Yeah. So this morning I was travelling to work on the underground, playing, because I couldn't just listen to the music. I wanted to see what visual clips they're doing of it. So I played it on the phone with my earphones in, but holding, this is what I do when I'm reading as well on the tube, holding it near enough under my chin that no one sitting next to me can see what I'm looking at. Even the very first track, I'm Telling You Now by Freddie and the Dreamers, I was sort of, my toes are almost tapping. Some weird stuff in there.
Yeah, great songs.
One thing I did notice is that, I don't know if this is a comment on Ed Stradling's predilection for bands like this, or whether this era promoted them, was of the 56 songs he chose for the 60s, 18 are sung by a band whose name starts with the word the. So you've got... I find this interesting. The Searchers, The Hollies, Lulu and the Lovers, The Moody Blues, The Who, The Ivy League, The Rolling Stones, The Fortunes, The Trogs, The Beach Boys, The Small Faces, The Move, The That must have been a weekend where I had very little on.
Yeah.
The Trinity, The Casuals, The Foundations. Whereas in later decades, it's, I think there's something quite significant about the names they choose according to the decades.
Toto. Toto were on there doing Africa. That was my favourite moment, a bit of Toto.
So do we think, what I was saying about me thinking that 60s music is slightly more sedate and noticeably old-fashioned, do you think it matches the era? I mean, obviously, what's notable about the 60s tape is it's all black and white.
Yeah.
Does it seem... I don't think that the music matches the show that much. I think it's not exciting enough.
Okay. Well, I think the thing is, what he's done there, putting it together, is just selected the songs that have tried to reflect the visual.
Yeah,
and also what were hits at that particular moment. I think that's the main thing with it, really. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, and music has evolved, hasn't it? And you can hear it evolving, like the show's evolved as well. And you can hear it evolving as it goes to the end of the 60s into the 70s. You just hear it evolving. There's no massive leaps. It just evolves.
Mm.
And that's, you know, like the show in that way.
I wonder whether his choice for Time Lash was a rather ironic, was We Close Our Eyes by Go West.
We wish we could. We wish we could, yeah.
I was going through these again. I didn't realise all half of this.
And Trial of the Time Lords, The Final Countdown by Europe as well, which I thought found quite funny. But I think one of the other hidden treasures on this too is also it uses Doctor Who's sort of, I suppose, telly spots, I guess, to tell a bit more of a story. So you've got the Blue Peter appearances on there, and then there's this marvellous bit as well, which I'd never seen before, and I don't know whether this is from Blue Peter or where they got this piece of footage from, but it's John Pertwee turning up at Billy Smart's circus in the Whomobile, greeted by, well, I suppose it's David Smart, isn't it?
Yes, I am, and you're David Smart.
Yes.
Hello, David, put it there. Nice to see you. Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing here. I'll turn the engine off. I was driving along on my way to unit headquarters, and all of a sudden I came across this little girl crying. Well, she was very upset because she'd lost all her dogs, you see. And that's your sister, isn't it?
Yes.
Gabriella. Anyway, she was crying, and she said, would I give her a lift? And I said, yes, of course I would. And so here I am.
That's very Pertwee, that, isn't it? Very sort of nice and friendly, but ever so condescending. Hello, hello. You're David Smart. I can't do a Pertwee voice.
Hello, David. Put it there.
I like that the old thing ends on the end of the 90s with Nothing Ever Happens by Delamitri.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. One of my favourite bands ever as well. So, yeah, that's a good one for me.
It's Never Too Late to Change Your Mind by Kylie Minogue as well.
Before we move on to the 70s, computer.
How can I be of service?
Could you send in a service robot with a drink tray, please? I'm getting a little parched. And some appropriately cheesy cocktail music, please.
Confirmed. Initiating cocktail hour program.
Thank you. Dandelion and Burdock, Mark?
Oh, yes, please. Sounds nice.
It's the 62! Ah, oh, Dandelion and Burdock. The impossible dream of 1,000 alchemists dripping like tea from an urn. A touch sardonic, perhaps, but not cynical. Thank you, computer. Cheers. Oh, don't start. Now that you've been behaving all day. 70s music. Tell me what you two thought of this one.
This is the best one.
Oh, you think so?
I think this is the best one, yeah.
Oh, you think so? Said Doc, not revealing his opinion at all.
I think it's one of the... I think the 1970s is one of the most diverse eras for music. I mean, you think about it, it started off, I mean, we've already spoken about the psychedelia, but you had the Beatles breaking up as well. And then, of course, you end it, and you've had the birth of Motown, the birth of punk, the birth of glam. You know, it's possibly the most eclectic era. And I think that this is, you know, very well represented by the fact that you can go from something like, let's say, I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, going over the top of Day of the Daleks, to something like Ballroom Blitz by Sweet, and you've also got the inclusion of, you know, something like I Don't Like Mondays right at the very end of the 70s video, you know.
Good stuff. And Now I'm Here by Queen, one of my favourites on there.
Mm.
And Bohemian Rhapsody, obviously, as well.
Mm.
Brilliant songs. They're all great songs, aren't they? And they all mark the time, that's the thing.
Mm.
As I was saying earlier. Which one's Now I'm Here, remind me? I've forgotten.
The Queen. Santaran Experiment. Yeah.
No, I mean, how does that song go?
Oh, Queen. Oh, it's
here
a...
I stand, here
oh,
I
of
stand.
Course, yes. Yeah.
Down in the city, just to you and me.
I just assumed that was called Here I Stand. That's something I found interesting here, because I've watched The Faith of the Sisters Want to Realize it in preparation for this. To remind us, I had the computer draw up a list of all the songs on these playlists, and in searching for them, having to Google things, I think, what the hell's this song called? I didn't realise until about halfway through that at the end of this playlist, they're all listed at the end of the tracks. Unfortunately, with the quality of the tapes on YouTube is practically indistinguishable, so I was looking at stuff like The Hollies. I didn't know The Hollies had sung a song called The Ale That Is Brown until I twigged that it was The Air That I Breathe.
Oh, good tune, that one. Good tune.
Since you've just mentioned I Don't Like Mondays, Hayden, we can't miss the opportunity to... a computer, can you search for the tape of Russell Brand and Bob Geldof at the 2006 NME Awards, please?
Of course, the winner is Live 8, so please welcome to the stage Sir Bobby Gandalf, everybody.
Swearing is a persistent theme where Live 8 is concerned.
Russell Brand, what a... mostly thank you to the people here in this room who did Live Aid. That's what Live Aid was. I think it was a great event. Thank you, everyone, very much indeed for this. Thank you, Joel Sinclair, for doing it, and Stefan and Dave from EMI. Thank you.
Paul Geldof there. Obviously, firstly, an amazing man to whom we have a lot to be grateful, not him calling me a of course. Really, it's no surprise that he's such an expert on famine. He has, after all, been dining out on I Don't Like Mondays for 30 years.
It wasn't as enjoyable as I expected in the 70s. It was enjoyable, but I don't think the tunes were as catchy as the 60s. I know you said, Mark, you know, it's not a sudden cut-off point in style, musical style, at the end of 1969, the beginning of 1970, but
you heard it,
I expected to enjoy it quite more, given that it's a combination of disco and glam rock. I mean, I have to confess, I've said my own musical tastes sometimes verge so much on the camp that I make Your Own Craig seem like a Motorhead fan by comparison. It wasn't really until round about Pyramids of Mars, which was in, 75, that I really started getting into it. And I think it's because first half of the 70s, you go from this fairly buttoned-up stuff of the 60s to bloody hairy hippies. I mean, that first half, I could imagine every single one of the bloody band wouldn't have shaved properly. I've been to a barber's for months. And it's more sort of hippie stuff.
What, you mean like Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes by Edison Lighthouse? Oh,
no, I have to say that I love that. I don't care if that makes me, you know, this serious, hard-hitting media personality that I've created for myself on this podcast over the last 2 years. Look, that destroys it at all. I love that song.
They're all good songs. Looking down there, there's some great songs in here. As I say, representing the time, that's what's most impressive about it. And I think the choice of songs to represent the stories as well, it's really clever.
When
really
is clever. Disco generally considered to have started?
Late 70s or mid 70s, yeah. Saturday Night Fever, wasn't it, that set the ball rolling?
That's what started to do. I mean, the new singers, when they prostituted themselves to Coca-Cola, I can't listen to I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing without thinking of, what is it? I'd like to give the world a Coke.
It's the sweetest thing, though, Doc. What are you on about?
It's the sweetest thing. What are our favourite songs from this 70s era?
Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
I couldn't if I tried, Hayden.
Over the Top of the Seeds of Doom. That one makes me laugh. I think maybe something like... I mean, actually, it goes very well over the top of Horror Fang Rock, but I mean, something like Show You the Way to Go by the Jacksons as well. And
Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow. Where did that come? Did you remember where... Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow.
I think it's Nightmare of Eden. Yeah, Nightmare of Eden, I think. I mean, and then of course we have got the brilliant Nobody Does It Better by Carly Simon.
Oh, stop trying to plug your 007 podcast, Nathan.
And then my absolute favourite, I have to say actually, is Golden Years over the top of Pyramids of Mars, because that is my favourite 70s story. And it really was the Golden Years of Doctor Who at that point as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So Bowie and Who, two things that should have come together a bit more frequently, but never did.
In the middle of the 70s, you've got Metal Guru by T-Rex.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Which led me to think, now Mark Bolan spells Mark with a C.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, was Mark Bolan inspired to call himself that? Because he's called Mark Feld, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
His original name is Mark Feld. When he chose the stage name of Mark Bolan, was he inspired to spell it with a C because of you, Mark?
Because of me?
I think he was.
Well, the truth is that I was christened with a K, and when I started singing when I was like 14, 15, we had a manager at the time, actually it was a bit later, maybe 16 or 17, but anyway, he suggested that I change my first name to a C, like a stage name. Atkinson, my proper second name, just change it because it was a bit more mysterious. And at first I thought, but then I thought, actually, I'll do that. And it just sort of stuck, really. So ever since, you know, my stage name is Mark with a C, but my bank account says Mark with a K. You know, that's there you go. So, but it wasn't inspired by Mark Bolan, to be honest, or Mark Cohen, who I'm a big fan of as well. It was my the manager at the time suggested it, and I thought that was pretty cool, like you would do when you're 16. Suddenly thinking, it gives me a whole new connotation to my name. But there you go. No.
My faves are Blockbuster by The Sweet. which yeah. at one time was going to be the introductory theme for the Deadly Dumb podcast. Given that given that most weeks we just haven't got a clue what to do. I'm slightly ashamed to admit a fondness for Cliff's Power to All Our Friends.
Oh, Lord.
Dynamite by Mud. The Air That I Breathe by the Hollies seems very 60s to me.
Lovely song.
Manchester Band, of course.
Yeah.
As were, was it Herman's Hermits?
Jerry and the Pacemakers. No, they were for Liverpool, weren't they?
No,
yes, but be careful. So maybe the same county, but yes, it was so, yeah, the so. It was Herman's Hermits. I think it's scandalous, though. I think Mr. Stradling needs to be taken to task for this. That his Boney M choice was Rivers of Babylon. Because, well, our listeners will be well aware of my fondness for Mar Baker. I mean, just the shapes being thrown by Bobby Farrell on the video alone would push it to the top of any musical list. I mean, hang on. What's that? Can you hear it? Is there a radio playing in the next room? Is that a news flash playing?
No.
Here is a special bulletin. Ma Baker is the FBI's most wanted woman. Her photo is hanging on every post office wall. If you have any information about this woman, please contact the nearest police station.
This is... Hayden is currently thinking, what the hell is happening here?
Who's Ma Baker? That's all I'm thinking.
Ma Baker is the FBI's most wanted woman, Hayden. Her photo is on the wall of every podcast. The every wall of every podcast. Every post office.
I thought it was Tom Baker's mum.
There's a point in the middle of Ma Baker where it turns like a newsflash saying, oh, this awful woman is you know, on the rampage. If you find her, you must tell the police at once. Mm. And on the video, Boney M stop dancing to it and stop cupping their ears and looking mysterious if they're trying to hear what's being said. Quite amusing. Links in the show notes, of course. Links in the show notes. The 80s.
Yeah.
Mark, what did you think of the 80s one?
Well, it's great. I mean, you see it developing along with the show. I love seeing Pete Davidson again and Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, all the way through. And these songs that go hand in hand with them, you know. As I say, Africa, Toto, one of my favourites there. Total Eclipse of the Heart, brilliant song. Mm. It's a lovely... It brings back such great memories. I was at school for the early 80s and then left school, so this is... My sort of growing up period into my teens, all these songs as well. I mean, I got more into rock as it went on. You know, the Bon Jovi were the band that kicked it off for me, really. And no, actually, I tell a lie. I got into Rainbow and Black Sabbath and stuff at that sort of time. I'm just looking if there was it. I can't remember if there was any Black Sabbath or Rainbow on here. Was there? There was earlier on, wasn't there?
Did Black Sabbath guest on Rainbow?
The Black Sabbath guest on Rainbow?
Oh, what, the TV show? The group you mean, sorry.
Yeah,
the time of the war bungalow.
Zippy, who's that at the door?
The please welcome special guest. No, the link between Rainbow and Black Sabbath also is they shared a singer because Ronnie James Dio was the singer with Rainbow, and when he left them, he joined Black Sabbath when Ozzy Osbourne left.
Who's this?
So, a bit of trivia there.
What's he called?
Ronnie James Dio. He was a great singer. He used to sing in Richie Blackmore's Rainbow, and then he left them.
Hayden, what do you think of the 80s selection?
The 80s one, it becomes a bit more diverse, I think, really, doesn't it? I mean, I love the fact that it starts off with Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark with Enola Gay, and then you've got something like, you know, like Kids in America for The Keeper of Charkin, which I think is a pretty good one, and also Down Under by Men at Work for Snake Dance, which, of course, is one of my favourite ones. But also... Like I said again, it sort of evokes these guilty pleasures within me, because until I saw the Doctor Who years and also the clip they used for Awakening, I never liked Nick Kershaw, or Wouldn't It Be Good? And after that, I did. So thanks for that, Ed Stradlin. But I think it's towards the end where it becomes more ironic and also more hilarious as well, because it doesn't have to be this way. He plays over the top of Colin Baker's axing. And then What Have I Done to Deserve This by Dusty Springfield and the Pet Shop Boys plays over the top of Time and the Rani. So,
can you remember what I Want to Know What Love Is? What story went with that one?
That was The Vengeance on Varos, that one.
Oh, right. <okay. laughs> I love a bit of Foreigner. Again and again, they're one of my favourite bands. Love a bit of Foreigner.
Oh, voted Remain, did you? See? We can cover the referendum too, you know. So I just segue into Hayden's remark about... You stole my joke about my prepared joke about Europe and the final countdown, Hayden.
Oh, did I?
I had a long riff about the referendum planned on for that. The 80s was the era of the three of these tapes that surprised me the most, because there could have been a real problem here in that Doctor Who was cancelled in 1989, just as the Stone Roses released the Stone Roses. Mm. You know, i.e. just as proper music was beginning.
Oh, whatever. But yeah.
I was quite surprised it's the best era of the three.
Because
I think I look up on the 80s, it's a particularly depressing decade. And I'm not talking about just politics and economics. It wasn't particularly a joyous time in my life. It wasn't particularly sad. It wasn't particularly amazing. And I think I just assumed, the music must have been crappy as well. But I loved it. I was just far more... I didn't even dislike this. I was criticising the 70s. I didn't dislike any of it. It was just by comparison. But I possibly assumed as well that it would all be... You know how Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred like to pretend that... What was that? David Tennant used to be in some kind of socialist theatre group, didn't he?
Hmm.
Called something like... He's called something like 95... 95.5 or something, and it's supposed to represent that, you know, 95% of all the wealth is held by 5% of people in the country. And so you can imagine, oh yeah, I really like to go to one of their plays. That would be depressing at all. but when you see that he's actually clearly done some seriously political acting, you can understand why Sylvester McCoy and Sophie Aldred want to try and pretend that. The Happiness Patrol was a searing indictment of Thatcherite economics. When in fact, it was just Sheila Hancock doing a bad impersonation of Margaret Thatcher. I think I assumed, it's all going to be angry music. But it wasn't. It was just really, really closely camp disco. I mean, Mickey by Tony Basil and The Lion Sleeps Tonight by Tight Fitz are hardly rallying cries for the oppressed to take to the streets, are they? When you see state film footage or staged film footage of the masses storming the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg, you imagine them singing rousing anthems of Soviet solidarity, don't you? Don't you imagine them singing, "Oh, Mickey, you're so fan, you're blown. Hey, Mickey!" And then we'll ignore Hayden, my Europe joke that Hayden's trodden all over. You know that thing where you hear a tune and you can't for the life of you place where you've heard it before? I mean, you probably don't, Mark, because you live with this stuff. Yeah. For years now, I've been unable to place a particular tune. And then I was listening to these 80s tapes, and it was... It was an epiphany, because I finally realised... I must have probably not been listening to the top 20 this week, but I realised, finally, that Robert De Niro's Waiting by Bananarama is the tune to the seminal... Christopher Bidmead's Writing by the late lamented Tachyon TV podcast.
It's very good. It's very good.
It sort of goes, Christopher Bidmead's Writing, bringing in science. Christopher Bidmead's Writing, adding the logic. Taking his time just to hammer out all the joy. So that was quite a bit of a revelation. Good job, Tachyon's TV is gone, by the way. Otherwise, we'd have to knock ourselves down to fifth best Doctor Who podcast. There's a lot of... You know, I was joking about the all those bands in with the... There's a lot of names here, aren't there? Both of sing people and of bands that could only be the 80s. Tony with an I, Basil, Bonnie Tyler. I don't know if Nick Kershaw is... just makes me think of the 80s. Even Delamitri. I think that's a very 80s name. Phil Collins as well. Is it? Would you ever get a band in 2016 calling themselves Bucks Fizz, Tight Fit, Depeche Mode, even Tears for Fears? It's not quite One Direction, is it?
They've been used, haven't they?
Very, very memory evoking. I mean, I've made love to half of these songs.
Really?
Admittedly, I would have been the only person in the room at the time. But nevertheless, so, lousy decade, brilliant music. Right, so, thank you for joining us, Mark.
It's all right, you're welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's a pleasure.
We should like to have you back sometime.
Yes, that'd be lovely, yeah. It's a pleasure to interact with you after listening to you so many times and been walking the dog and on my bike. It's lovely to hear you talking back to me, so thanks for having me on.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you, mate. Thank you very much. Nice to have you on as well.
So, Hayden?
Don't throw bodies into the river.
Uncle Terence, we have enemy ships in Sector 27.
It's a trap.
Bye-bye, Duggan.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.
Have a good evening.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at diddlydum, on Twitter at diddly_dum, or email us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum, the empty space that circles time.